The economic downturn and abundant anecdotes about parents whose children have returned to the nest after college have intensified questions about the value of a college degree in today's job market. In the wake of a report Wednesday documenting that college graduates have been hurt but have fared better than others in the job market since 2008, the report's author, Tony Carnevale, and Jamie Marisotis of the Lumina Foundation joined Inside Higher Ed editors and reporters for a wide-ranging discussion about the value of a college degree, the emergence of new credentials, and rebounding male enrollments, among other things. Excerpts of this discussion follow.
Do you think that the kind of data that you have here can change the way the public perception that these days college doesn't get you much?
My own bias about the public perception is that it's a perception that is more complaint than it is a perception that people act on. Mm-hmm. It's part of the general complaint about higher education. There is a lot of anxiousness over prices, a lot of anxiousness over value. That is, does it have value? Should it have more? It's more worry than it is any kind of information that results in decisions. We know that the decisions are made by class. That is, what is most disturbing about it is the most likely people affected by this are people on the bubble, and that is lower-income students, returning military, who want to decide whether or not they're going to get a job or take advantage of their benefits and go to school. I think what this shows, and I think we show it over and over and over and over again, is that the interesting part of this story, I think, the way this comes at it, is that it essentially says something we said before, but this pretty well nails it, and that is that there's an illusion out there. And the illusion is largely driven by the data on unemployment and underemployment in higher education, which is real, relatively low but real, and a general feeling that there's a decline in that sector that's associated with the cycle. But underneath that, what we actually found here, and we didn't say it strong enough, I think, frankly, is that structural change is accelerating. In recession. We know that's true of the last two recessions. You can't say it about this recession literally until we're probably 2017, when we're several months past it. But what you're seeing here is structural change, shift from high school to college that is accelerating, so that even in the recovery, we're not getting high school jobs. That, I think, is the import of this, is that underneath all the gloomy unemployment statistics, there is a machine running, and it's running faster.
When the idea is mocked, it's generally mocked as if the president said everyone should enroll at St. John's College and spend 4 years reading great books. Yeah. How do you separate the idea of some post-secondary training? And look at your work. You're not exactly encouraging the whole world to study philosophy. How do you separate those ideas in the public mind? Because it strikes me it's easier to say, oh, this is silly, they shouldn't all go study philosophy, than they need some training.
I think part of the challenge that we face is that the message that you're seeing pretty clearly and consistently, I didn't think about the fact that this actually does go back to the Clinton administration, is that post-high school education is what really matters. In our lexicon at Lumina, we use the words college and post-secondary education interchangeably. And in the public's mind, I think there is still this mental bias that college means an elite, probably private, four-year education, probably residential, mm-hmm. the whole model, which is, one out of 10 people in higher education today. So it's a really skewed view. The question about the value, I think, is where the inability of higher education to respond to that question, I think, has some real consequences. Because, there's lots of data, not just Tony's data, showing that the demand for talent is increasing very rapidly in our society. And so the talent demands are increasing faster and faster. And at the same time, the post-secondary, the talent that's being that's being articulated by the employers, by the labor force, is post-secondary in nature, and yet the post-secondary system doesn't appear to be able to meet that demand. So the issue is you've got these prices that have exceeded, at an average level anyway, the level of inflation for nearly three decades now. So you've got this long-term trend, and so in the public's mind, the question is, well, what are we actually paying for? And I think the real issue to us is the inability of higher education to respond to that comes at a pretty significant societal price, because either we literally will see fewer people going to college, which would be disastrous from an economic and social perspective, or we're going to start to see the decline of higher education as we know it. And we need, as much as we think at Lumina traditional higher education has got to change, we need traditional higher education to be part of that new system going forward, because you know all the stuff that's now starting to get a little bit of attention, MOOCs and all the, you know, what I call the democratization of learning, is really accelerating the understanding that there's no monopoly anymore among the traditional model of delivery of higher education. People are going to get education, and if it's certified learning, if there's a credential associated with it, the labor market, I think, is going to respond favorably to that. So I'm convinced that one of the biggest issues we're going to be talking about here in the next 4 or 5 years is, what are these credentials that we actually award that are post-high school in nature, whether they're in colleges and universities or anything else, and what do they actually mean? What do they represent? Because I think that the issue of credentials, we spend a lot of time at the policy level talking about how we're paying for it, et cetera, but I think the issue of credentials are the currency of the modern economy. And I think that the public is going to demand higher quality, or they're going to get it somewhere else. And I think that's part of what we're starting to see now.
Do you worry, though, about credentials value going down? As, I mean, you've written about the value of certificate programs. But as everyone shouts, oh, you can take my MOOC course, and then there's a cool way for you to get a certificate that says you finished the MOOC course.
Right.
Is that going to be the same as, say, a certificate program in computer help desk management at Nova?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, and whereas you've had a tradition of certificates that were, say, several courses in a related field versus I just took a MOOC.
Right.
I mean, do you worry about that?
Absolutely. You know, I think the question is, you know, what's the standard of quality? And what does that actually mean? I mean, it's, you know, the self-referential here, but it's why we made the choice to test something like the degree qualifications profile, because we're not convinced that the DQP is the answer, but it's a mechanism for having that conversation that didn't exist before, because it actually presses the question, what should these credentials actually mm-hmm. mean? And in your example, you know, is that first credential equivalent to that second credential? It seems...
We
don't know the answer to that in the current system right now, by the way. We have no mechanism for determining that.
I'm sorry, but just want to follow up. But then, is there some responsibility to all the cheerleaders of change? Because everyone's shouting, oh, this democratization is wonderful.
Yeah.
You can get education in so many ways. I'm hearing less people say, you know, fewer people say what you just said, that every certificate is not equal. Just because you can get it free and a certificate doesn't mean it's good.
Well, but is this, I mean, I guess part of the question is, well, is a certificate, the kind of certificate that the Sebastian Thrun said he was giving to his students at Stanford, that Stanford very carefully, very quickly responded to, a piece of paper that says you finished something isn't the same as the certificates you wrote about in your last report, right? I mean, in other words, have we defined certificate well? Can anybody produce a certificate and call it?
we haven't. I mean, one of the things that I think we have a responsibility for is to actually take that discussion about the DQP to the level of certificates, right? That's something that we made the proactive choice to stay at the degree level at the beginning, but clearly that's a major issue, because, you know, look, you've got industry-based certifications, you've got certificates that are awarded by colleges and universities. I mean, you've got all kinds of stuff out there. Now this whole new environment that we're talking about, and there needs to be some parameters on it. It does not exist. What's interesting is that the labor market essentially tells you which ones are valuable and which ones aren't, because employers will recognize that certificate and that credential more than they'll recognize this one. So in a way, the market gives you the answer, But in an environment where we need a lot more people with talent and skills at the post-secondary level, we've got to have a better common understanding about what these things actually represent. I just want to make one more point, just back on the value question, because I just think that it's such a raging debate right now. One of the things that we are grappling with at Lumina is the chart in the College Advantage that shows the earnings differential really sort of brings this all together in my mind, is that if you look at the historical trend there of the wage premium, what the economists call the wage premium, it went up dramatically. Now it's leveled off a little bit. We're at this 9,700% level. That wage premium, from a historic perspective, is probably too high, right? The problem is that what that shows is that the demand is so far exceeding the supply that employers are willing to pay a premium that's probably not rational, that's not optimal over a long period of time. So if Lumina is successful and more people get credentials, that premium is actually going to come down. And if the premium comes down, the value question is going to get intensified, right, and it's going to get exacerbated. That's why we think the business model questions, the questions about credentials, and the questions about tuition and financial aid systems have to be at the forefront of the conversation, because if we start to see increases in actual credentials here in the next 5 years, and we think we will start to see some uptick of that, the next debate's going to be, well, wait a minute, now it looks like the premium's going down, and we are going to be confronted with this value question in ways that we can't even see right now. Well, I mean, I'm not an economist, Tony, so tell me if I'm wrong.
I'm really glad to hear you say that, because you're somebody I worry about on this. And that is because you fund me in part. And that is that the truth is what America needs is for higher education to be less valuable. That's what America needs.
Well, okay, but then...
Because that means that... Because the differences in the access to higher education is driving the growing difference in income, in earnings in the United States. And the only way we're going to get our hands on this is not by increasing the minimum wage. It's healthcare will help a lot, actually, I think, at the margin. Things like that do, because you're substituting government for earnings. But in the end, what's driving this is the value of higher education. And the differential value and the increasingly differential value, we'll know when we've succeeded. We project we'll need 20 million more by 2025. That takes the premium down to, I think it's 49%, which is a lot lower than, in that particular study, we start with a 94% premium, I think.
Yeah. Okay, but so if higher education becomes less valuable, but is perceived as continuing to cost. I mean, the other piece is that's driving this conversation is the debt figures, the debt.
Absolutely.
So if you talk about higher education becoming less valuable, but maybe, I mean, doesn't it inevitably have to become less expensive or less perceived or perceived as less expensive?
Absolutely. Right. I mean, this is the question. The fundamental question and why we've been on productivity for the last several years is that the business model fundamentally has to change. It's not just the sticker price that we're charging and the net price and all of those things. It's really fundamentally about the delivery model, right? So it's how we pay for college, what credentials actually mean, and how we're delivering higher education. All of those things are going to have to change here in the next few years, because in the absence of that, we really will get to a point where people will say, well, I'm not sure that really is worth it. I mean, it is clearly worth it now. But over time, the question, there's going to be a growing question about the value that I think is going to be hard to duck. I mean, you all know the historic pattern here, right? Which is that the way colleges and universities historically have gotten revenue to fund their continuing, you know, their ongoing operation is either by increasing tuition or getting more support from governments. I mean, those are the main, you've got philanthropy, but it's a relatively small piece. Well, both are so constrained now, and yet the demand for talent is increasing so fast societally, you can't keep charging that price.
But what about, let's talk about, say, a community college that has a lot of health professions programs.
Yep.
Their graduates are getting jobs. You've shown that their graduates are generally in high demand, and their tuition isn't that high. But they can't admit qualified students because the states have walked away. So why is the problem I mean, I understand the economic model problem when you're talking about a residential liberal arts college, but when you're talking about community colleges, say, why are we saying that their economic model is wrong as opposed to states are wrong to have walked away?
I'm saying both. I'm certainly not arguing that we should be okay with the level of investment we have now. What I'm saying is that the reality is the level of investment now, given the macroeconomic questions that we have, is unlikely to increase. Certainly unlikely to increase at the level that would allow us to just supersize the current system. I don't see how we supersize the current system simply with more resources to do more of what we're doing with the current delivery model. The point is that the delivery model's got to change, because even with increasing investment, you don't get anywhere close to the 60% goal.
I actually wanted to switch to gender, although the rate of increase for men and women was slowing down at the end of the years you covered. Do you think that, men are back? Do you think it's going to, continue?
We'll see. My own bias, and this probably more reveals my personality than any analytic sense, is that I think that they'll fall off again, because construction, by 2017, I think most of us agree that construction will be back.
Yeah.
When construction comes back, I think men don't go to college for very good reasons. They can make a decent wage. What a decent wage an 18-year-old wants is different than what a 50-year-old wants. So I think construction will come back sufficiently so that they'll... But it will not come back to what it was. That's the real test here.
Not that we can necessarily wrap a bow around this, but to get sort of... Tony said before that the sort of in terms of the... that this was going to be a conversation, this value sort of conversation was going to take a long debate, I think you described it. Is there time? I mean, in other words, I guess the question to me is sort of, I guess I'm thinking about the sort of this question of whether there's a bubble, which there's obviously been a lot of talk about. There's a bubble. There may not, I guess the question is, do you think the value, the proof that you're talking about needing and is going to, How fast can it play out? How fast does higher education have to for this to before?
I think the pace of change is accelerating. One of the questions about the bubble, besides the sort of hyperinflated rhetoric about a bubble, is the question of what does that actually mean? What if the demand for talent continues to increase? What does a bubble actually look like? And our worldview is that the demand is going to be met somehow. That there's going to be something developed that's going to meet the demand, either offshore or through rapid changes in terms of use of technology, et cetera. So our view is that there should be a sense of urgency. I think that is the thing that is missing right now. It is not that, in my 5 years at Lumina, I think our general view is that many people in the country get the big goal, right, and the idea that at a sort of conceptual level that makes sense. But they don't see the reality of how you get there, and they're not sure exactly how we can actually steer the Titanic to get there. I think the mistake is thinking that we've got a long time to fix these problems, because we don't think we do. We think that the system's got to be redesigned in order to be able to get from here to there. And the system is going to include both the traditional colleges and universities and all of these new things that are starting to come online that look very different. So I think that the time is getting shorter. I think the pace of change is accelerating, and our efforts in the next few years, you will see very clearly, are going to be focused primarily on helping the country think about and act on this system redesign, because we think we've concluded that that is the biggest challenge going forward in the next few years. It's really that new credentialing system, the new business model, and the new efforts to actually restructure delivery.
Which parts of the system is the need the most urgent?
I don't know that I could assign value to that. I think the area where we've had the least conversation that we need to pick it up is on the credentials question. I think that that's the area where, I think that there's been a lot of heat, not enough light on the financing questions, and there's certainly now some discussions about delivery. But I'm very concerned about the issue of credentials. I just think that question about what is an associate's degree, what is a bachelor's degree, that's one level. But the other is, why are those things the things that we're seeing as the primary currency in that labor market. And that's why I think the initial work on the current definition of certificates and the kinds of, I think you're going to see new kinds of credentials emerge here, not just because of the badges, which is sort of one end of it, but I think you're going to start to see the labor market say, we need hybrid credentials here. And I think higher education's got to get ahead of that.
If you're sitting at an individual institution, how do you, it's very difficult to respond to this. Who talks for the system? Who brings the system together to figure out what a different kind of credential, a hybrid credential looks like? Where does that happen?
I don't know. I'm intrigued by edX and some of these new entities that we're seeing, because you're seeing collaborations among historic rivals in ways that you hadn't seen before. I'm not optimistic that the system leaders are going to be the traditional associations or disciplinary organizations or things like that. My guess is that it's going to be the emergence of a new set of players that are willing to take some chances to say, we want to be part of that change, whether it's the group like edX, or whether it's the efforts around things like what Bill Powers has been trying to do at UT Austin, which is to, you know, really start thinking about productivity in a very different way. I don't know the answer, but my guess is that it's going to be a coalition of the willing.
But so traditional players acting untraditionally, outside normal.
And being pressed by the new players.
Right.
I think the new players are not all going to be for-profit. Mm-hmm. I think the new players, you're going to see lots of new entities pressing to get into this system.